Pop Spotting 167.
Tuesday, November 22nd, 2011. Welcome to Pop Spotting. I'm Jen.
And I'm Ryan.
It's TV Tuesday, and we wanted to check in on a couple of our favorite shows, which both recently reached milestones of sorts.
That's right. On Fox, Fringe just had its delayed fall finale. It will return in January. And over on FX, Sons of Anarchy just aired a very special 90-minute episode with only 3 episodes left here in Season 4. Now, once again for TV Tuesday, this is our take on shows we're watching. If you're not watching the show and you want us to talk about other shows, it's going to be up to you to get that conversation started. And if you're not up to date on any of these shows, you might want to save this podcast until you are. With that said, let's start on Fox with Fringe. Now, we did already do an update on the show about a month ago, and there weren't as many episodes since then because baseball or some other sport was making for preemptions and the like. But still, have things changed? How are you still feeling right now with Fringe so far?
These last few episodes have really messed with my head. It's really hard to keep straight what we're seeing now and what we've seen previously. And it's really striking an emotional chord in me these last few episodes because they've been kind of personal and kind of visceral. So I'm being totally confused, but I'm also really feeling something.
Well, you know, I definitely hear what you're saying. I do think that I was not sure if I was going to really be on board for the Monster of the Week format coming back. I mean, at first I was like, that's a nice throwback. It's back to season one, but I hope we can get back to the larger arc. And I would say that I'm still feeling very unfulfilled in terms of that larger arc. But on the other hand, I'm kind of liking these monsters of the Monsters of the Week. I mean, and it's been less about, you know, shock and novelty, like what's the grossest thing we could come up with, which is where I think Fringe started,
right,
to, or what's the most interesting story that we can come up with for a monster, to stories that are really, like you said, more personal and things that we can identify with. Now, a couple of weeks ago, we had Those We Left Behind with the time glitches that everyone is experiencing, sort of skips and things repeating. And it was funny because when that started happening, I was like, oh, okay, this is a big clue. And this is going to be the start of that larger arc where we find out what's wrong with Peter or how we're going to fix the problem with Peter. But no, it turns out it wasn't as big a clue as we thought. And the cause was just this small, singular human drama, this little story of a guy who was trying to stay with his wife, you know, using time to spend more time with his wife. And yet, even though it was that story of the week, I really liked that story.
I
could identify with it. And I think that sense, that take got even better with this most recent episode, which I think might leave people a little dissatisfied in terms of the grander scheme, except for the last few moments. We'll get to that. But I found myself really lost in the story of the week's character, you know, this Eugene, the wallflower, person who's invisible. I have to say, I really like the opening, in fact, of this episode where we see Olivia in her place and she's having trouble sleeping and she's looking in the mirror and it's all washed out and gray and she's not looking her best. She goes out to get drugs and, you know, there's fluorescent lighting and she doesn't even look like herself. And then she runs into Lincoln and they have this conversation and there's the great song playing in the background. Mm-hmm. It felt like a different show. I should have looked up who directed it. Maybe that's why it felt different. But I would say that episode and Those We Left Behind with the man who was trying to spend more time with his wife were very romantic episodes. And the story of Eugene just wanting to have that human connection with someone to make eye contact with him and acknowledge him as a person, I thought that was a really touching story. And still they found a way, as they have, to tie that into the experiences of our characters, of Peter wanting to be acknowledged as a person, of Olivia trying to realize if she's normal or if there's something wrong with her. So again, yes, it's Monster of the Week stories, but much more interesting, much more accessible, and much more emotional Monsters of the Week that we're dealing with here.
If there is one thing about the show that is really messing with my head and giving me pause, it's the fact that there are two different Olivias that we know. There's the Olivia that we first meet, and there's the Olivia in this timeline, and it's hard for me to keep in my head what is the truth about Olivia versus what we see now. I mean, we're told, for instance, that Nina Sharp raised Olivia and her sister, and when we meet Olivia in season one, she really has an antagonistic relationship with Nina Sharp. We think Nina Sharp is hiding something and she's the enemy. And I'm wondering how are we supposed to keep straight everything that's changed, and how does that affect the dynamic of the characters and what's happened in the story?
Well, you know, that's what I think people who are into this show for the conspiracies and the clues and the secrets and the mythology. That's what they love. I mean, catching the things that are different. For example, you know, in this world, in this timeline, there's not as much awareness of these Cortexafan trials or these experiments, or, you know, even Nina Sharp says she's unaware of what was going on, or at least she's pretending to be unaware. But again, you know, it's finding these little differences that I think people are really getting into. But I agree with you, if they drag it out or they're subtle enough about it too much, you start to forget and you're like, well, this just seems weird, or this just seems odd. I mean, this Olivia that we're with now is much colder. I mean, we remarked upon that initially, and I do think that now we're seeing more about her. We're learning she's affected by her past. Maybe she's having trouble dealing with her feelings, or she feels abnormal. But on the other hand, as we begin to learn about this Olivia, we are also remembering that she's not our Olivia. She's not the Olivia that we first fell in love with. So how much should we care about this Olivia?
And what about Walter? He really seemed to be coming unglued when we first see him this season. He's really psychologically messed up in the head, and now he's kind of back to form. In fact, he's in better form than the Walter that we originally meet, and that really bugs me a little bit, because I think seeing Peter again and having this idea in his head that Peter could have meant something to him, I think that would torture him a lot more, and it bothers me that he seems to be his old self.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, he's back to being a little funny, a little odd. I mean, certainly there's still that interesting friction, I think, with Astrid, but overall, I think we're seeing what feels like season one or two Walter, and we were really excited by the prospect of him coming unglued, like you said, and you know, being a little almost menacingly lost, and here maybe they're saying something, maybe it's intentional, maybe that now that this Peter, who we're also being told doesn't belong in this world, but maybe now that he's here, he is still somehow a stabilizing force, but I'm not sure if that's exactly what's going on. I will say, though, you know, we were curious about Lincoln. I said when he showed up, like, well, great, he's going to basically be the guy who walks around asking the questions that new viewers to the show would ask, but I think he's developing more as a character. He's not just this hapless hanger-on.
No, I'm enjoying him a lot, because I think, especially in that scene where he and Olivia get together in the diner, that really revealed a lot about him, a lot about his character. He has problems sleeping too, and there might be more to him also emotionally than we first thought.
Well, what do you think about that, though? Because it does seem that, you know, Peter resolves that he doesn't belong here. He gives Lincoln glasses so he can look a little more handsome. They're getting ready for this, what sounds like a 3 a.m. date between Lincoln and Olivia. Do you think that they're trying to set up some kind of romantic relationship with those two?
I think the thing with Olivia is really interesting, because I think Olivia, because of her upbringing, has always had trouble letting people in. I think she took a huge risk in her relationship with John. John was her coworker, and there was a lot wrong there, but she trusted him, and he turned out to be not what she thought. So I think this, it kind of ties in with, I think, it's the cyclical nature of the show, that she's finally letting somebody from her professional life into her personal life, and I'm hoping this time it works out for her.
Wait, are you, Olivia and Peter, I mean, they're the couple of this show since the very beginning. Now you're saying you're open to the possibility of Olivia being with another man?
It depends. It depends on how they decide to develop their characters. I would like to see Olivia get a little bit more loose, and if that means being with Lincoln, then so be it.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, again, the problem is this isn't our Olivia, and that's where I continue to have concerns in terms of what's the grander game here. Where are we going? Because we have Peter saying, I guess, you know, these things, I know that Olivia meant something to me, but not here. I don't belong here. I need to go back. So, you know, he's writing himself out somehow. I mean, we were waiting for several episodes for Peter to come back. He was the centerpiece of the season, and even now we're seeing much less of Peter than I thought we would, and I don't know where we're going. Is it going to be Peter setting up Lincoln and Olivia and everybody's happy in this universe, and then he just disappears? I mean, who's going to be satisfied with that? Or is he going to go back again? Are we going to reunite with our original timeline, and then this entire season was for no purpose whatsoever? I'm really hoping that the writers are really clever and they've got something up their sleeves, but I'm really, really worried. I will admit, though, that, you know, the twist at the end of this last episode with Nina Sharp and the explanation of Olivia's headaches, that was pretty darn good.
That was one of the best moments on the show. That was a real surprise.
Well, at least in terms of making me have hope, I would agree of we're going to, again, get back to that larger arc, the bigger battle, maybe the other universe and Walternet and that whole storyline, which seems to have completely stalled. I think with the twist at the end of this episode, this fall finale is giving us that great hope, something to look forward to. Does not return. return, though, until January. That's Friday, January 13th, Friday the 13th, mm-hmm. in 2012 on Fox. Let's move over to Sons of Anarchy. I think just by your hooting and yelling and screaming at the television, probably your favorite show on TV right now. How are you liking where we are with Sons of Anarchy?
This is my favorite season so far because so much is happening, and it actually sometimes feels like everything is just going to fly apart because the stakes are so high. I mean, there are people dying, and there are so many things that we've anticipated that we knew were coming, and now it's finally happening.
Yeah, I would agree. This is a fantastic season, especially when I felt there was a lot of treading water last season. Here, it's like we have all of that anticipation. We have all that buildup and things that are probably going to go bad, but we're seeing it happen. We're seeing it go bad. We're seeing these consequences. I mean, we knew, for example, that Piney, oh, lovable Piney, but Piney, the conscious of the club, because he confronts Clay, that things aren't going to turn out well for him, and, well, things don't turn out well for him.
Right.
And even just unexpected things, like when they did the attack on the cartel, and there's landmines out there, and boom, you know, Kozik is gone, a character that we knew that had a name. I mean, I love it. They're not messing around. Things are going down. I mean, serious stuff is going down on Sons of Anarchy.
I thought it was very strange that this last episode that aired was a 90-minute, and it made me think, well, wait a minute, are they cutting this season short? Is this a finale? But I think considering everything that happened in that episode, it would have been foolish to break it up over 2 1-hour episodes. So I think that the 90-minute right there was just the perfect move.
Well, I think that you're right. Too much is happening overall on the show, and certainly in that episode, to have crammed it into a regular hour-long slot, it would have been almost comical to move through all of those points. I also did get the sense that there were more commercials than usual, though, so maybe they're just, you know, trying to get a little bit more money. They have another season they have to put together here. But you're right. I like what you said. Things feel like they're going to fly apart at any moment. There are so many wheels set in motion. It's almost hard to keep track of all of the things that seem to be coming to a head. It's all building up to something. And in terms of Clay, I mean, I think this season has been more about Clay than it has been about Jax. The series is really about Jax, but this has been Clay's season. And boy, is he revealing himself to be something much different, I think, than what we saw when we first met him.
I wonder, it just makes me wonder what changed him, or was he like that all along? Was he always abusive? I mean, he went from being so protective of Gemma for trying to kill people just for looking at Gemma wrong to dismissing her as an old lady and beating her up.
Well, you know, I like how you put that. I mean, maybe did he change, or has he always been this way? I'm of the opinion that he's revealing his true self, that he was always this way. Yes, he was protective of Gemma, but now we see that it's more the protection in terms of his property. He's very, very possessive, but I don't know anymore if the affection that we thought was there, that we saw in Gemma's eyes, was ever there in Clay. I do enjoy the fact that he's turning into such a sinister character. And in terms of character development, I think that Tara, Jax's girlfriend, she's really on a dark path here, but she's gone from someone who I think a lot of people were annoyed at as a character to not only just a sympathetic character, but somebody that we really, really feel for, that it's almost uncomfortable seeing what's happening to Tara here.
Tara was asked to do the impossible. She was raising another woman's child, and she did it out of love. So I cannot really get behind people that never liked Tara, because she was just doing exactly what she was asked to do. And now I want her to just run away, find a nice cardiologist, and live happily ever after, because she's not going to find the end that she really deserves with Jax. I mean, she is the Ophelia character.
Yeah, that's what I was about to say. Unfortunately, I mean, Tara's taken a turn that we know that, just like how we saw Piney, you know, what was going to happen to him. I think that the end for Tara is not a good one. She's very trapped. She did, like you said, she almost escaped. They wanted to run away, but now she has completely lost hope. She has given up. She says, all right, this is basically where I'm stuck. I can't do anything about it. And when, you know, Jax comes into the hospital room, they have that great conversation. She says, I'll never save a life. And Jax says, look, there's still a chance. You know, we can get out of here. There still might be an opportunity for you. Just maybe. You know, all of these forces working against her, and he's still trying to say that there's hope. And it is her. It is she. It is Tara that destroys that last glimmer of hope. She has that complete mental breakdown when she meets with Wendy. She comes back to wants to spend more time with her son, the son that Tara raised. She completely flips out, and I think that that dramatic moment is where I was like, oh my God, you know, yes, Ophelia, the end is going to be for Tara complete madness. She's going to be trapped. She has no other choice. I don't think it's going to be the cartel or Clay that gets Tara. I think, unfortunately, that the end of Tara is going to come at the hands of Tara.
Yeah,
here.
I agree.
Now, what do you think about Potter? You know, this quirky law enforcement guy. I was almost chuckling at him that he was just being a little too quirky, a little too interesting, a little too weird. I like where he's gone in the sense that he's got a lot more depth because he's also becoming a lot more evil on this show.
I want him to die. I want him to die in a spectacular June Stahl shooting, but in the nicest way possible, because he is pure evil, but he is interesting evil. I mean, this is the man who wanted Juice to pull the sample from the load of cocaine, and the sheriff said to him, well, if he gets caught smuggling this out, he's going to die. And Potter says, and? I mean, he's just ambitious and bloodthirsty, kind of in the same way Clay is, but on the opposite side.
So, I mean, I think he's building himself up to be more of a nemesis than I thought. You know, he's no longer the cartoon character that I was in terms of the negotiations that he's doing, the way that he's playing everybody against each other. He's a lot more interesting, I'll grant you that. You mentioned Juice. I really liked, you know, Juice's development. In fact, we're not seeing as much about Jax, but we're seeing a lot more about some of these side characters, and Juice is someone who's come to the forefront in, I think, an interesting way as well.
Juice was the person who messed up. He was kind of the comic relief. He was the one who was always caught with his pants down, and now he's in an impossibly tight place. He has no idea where to go. He is lost, and the only beacon of hope that he has is his friendship with Chibs.
Yeah.
And we don't know Chibs very well either. We know about some of his family situation, but as a person, we didn't know really anything about him. And to see this kind of friendship between Juice and Chibs, they really rely on each other, and that's been a really good addition to this season.
Well, I definitely like the scene where Chibs and Juice, you know, Chibs basically says, Juice, you know, what's the problem? And Juice confesses the big secret that motivated him to turn on the club. Basically, he had to admit that his father was black, and we, you know, it seemed ridiculous to me that that would be a deal breaker, and fortunately, it is Chibs who responds to that with, like, are you kidding? That's no big deal. You know, don't worry about it. I really like how that was kind of dissolved, or how that was disarmed. And yeah, like you said, it's these relationships, these side relationships that are really adding a lot of the color, a lot of the heart to Sons of Anarchy. Now, things between Gemma and Clay aren't so good, but we're also seeing so many people, other people who care very deeply, perhaps too much for Gemma. Tiggs coming back out of the woodwork, I think, being a little more open in terms of his affection for her, his protectiveness of her. And we've always had this really kind of affectionate relationship with Unser, and he's, you know, having more of a role. Unfortunately, just like with Piney and anybody else like Tara, who knows what's going on with these letters, I would say that Unser's probably not long for this world.
No, I'm predicting that he's probably the next death, and it's a little bit scary, like I said, how fast the show is moving. I mean, for instance, I had no idea that Opie would find out so soon what happened to his dad, Piney, but he now knows. He's now seeking out Clay, and this confrontation between Clay and Opie could happen any time.
Right, well, you know, remember, we had Gemma basically saying, no, don't turn Clay in. Clay will die at the hands of a son. And of course, that could have been anything, because a son could be any of the Sons of Anarchy. It seems obvious that it would be Clay, but already you've got Opie on the warpath. And frankly, it seems everybody's basically got a problem with Clay. Everybody wants to take Clay down. There are a lot of suspects out there. I think my primary question is that a lot of this still kind of revolves around these letters about John Teller and what happened to him, and his, you know, his feeling that the club was headed in the wrong direction and shouldn't get into some of these schemes. Now, if I were a member of the Sons of Anarchy, and we decided at one point to get into drug running and gun running, and then all of a sudden all hell breaks loose and people start dying and people start disappearing, and there's just things are flying apart, like you said, why would it be a big shock that our founder, John Teller, thought it was a bad idea, too? I mean, why is that such a dangerous secret that clearly Clay is going to go through anything to keep away from the rest of the members of this club?
I don't understand that at all, because Bobby has been very vocal about not wanting this deal with the cartel for a very long time. And I think Bobby probably has never really trusted Clay. So I don't know what exactly makes Clay think that these letters are so damaging, because I think all of the seeds are there. I think all of the mistrust that he's expecting from everybody has already always been there.
Exactly, exactly. So, I mean, I'm worried or wondering if the story of these letters is going to basically be like the secret of Juice's dad, that it's going to turn out to be nothing. But in a similar way, it's enough to drive the characters, motivate them to set some big things in motion, make some really big decisions, and I think adding to the tragedy of the overall story. Well, this is Sons of Anarchy's fourth season. There's a new episode tonight. It's titled Burnt and Purged Away. Then we're going to have a two-part season finale, the season finale of season four, and the title of that episode, that two-part episode, is To Be. Mm-hmm. I like that, and that'll be November 29th and December 6th. A lot of things happening, a lot of things coming down. What do you think is going to happen in the finale? What do you think is going to close this season?
Anything is possible. I mean, there's a reason they brought Wendy back, and I think she's going to figure into it somehow. And like you said, Unser is definitely not long for this world.
Do you think Tara's going to make it out of this season?
No.
Really? What about Clay? I mean, you know, all of these things are coming down on Clay. Is he going to be around for season five?
That would be a very, very bold choice on Kurt Sutter's part to kill Clay off, but it could happen.
Well, you know, Kurt Sutter, you were telling me Kurt Sutter's in Sons of Anarchy.
I didn't realize this until just now, but Kurt Sutter plays Otto, and Otto...
Right.
Has been the focus of a lot of episodes this season, and it just really impresses me how good Kurt Sutter is. I mean, I think he's as good as the rest of the crew.
Well, it basically shows how into his own show he is, for sure. So that's kind of a cool bit of trivia. Again, three more episodes to go. The fifth season will happen, though. 13 episodes still to come, so there's much more of the story for our friends in the Sons of Anarchy. That'll wrap TV Tuesday for this week. Those two shows, Fringe and Sons. And as for next week, maybe you can help us line up our topics. Now, we do probably want to touch on Chuck on NBC, a fun little show that we've always loved. It's had a rough season, and unfortunately, this is officially its last season. They just announced that its 13 episodes is going to be all we're going to get after this two-week hiatus. There's six more episodes before they wind everything up in January with Chuck versus the Goodbye.
Aww.
And I think it's about time to go back to talking about some of this season's new shows. These new fall shows, I admit we've fallen behind on them, but it might be up to you to tell us which ones deserve conversation. And in fact, if there's a show we've not talked about, if we've got a glaring blind spot, we really need you to help us out. We want to talk about what you want to talk about, so don't be shy. Keep us posted on what you are watching and what you think about it.
There are many ways you can do that. You can email us at feedback@popspotting.net. You can leave a comment on the blog at popspotting.net, or you can call us at 815-310-0808.
We'd love it if you'd give us a call, but of course you can also just engage with us on Facebook at facebook.com/popspotting or twitter.com/popspotting.
Big thanks to those of you who've rated and reviewed our show in the iTunes podcast directory. The iTunes podcast directory is really one of the best ways to bring in new listeners.
And if you enjoy our podcast, we hope you'll take a moment to share Popspotting with your friends and family. And to those of you who have sent us shout outs recently on Facebook, on Twitter, and Google+, thanks a lot. We really appreciate it.
Thank you to Dan Pashman of The Sporkful for making our theme song. And thanks you guys for listening to our show.
For Pop Spotting, I'm Ryan.
I'm Jen.
Aloha.
Aloha.